This is the Saturday Night Live, Day of Sobriety number 19, Saturday, November 28th, 1992, at El Paseo de Saratoga, room 120, San Jose, California. Tonight's speaker is Johnny H. from Long Beach, California. The original recording and its copy are available at the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any AA member at the public level. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. My turn at the microphone now. Jim is living proof that you can dress somebody up, but you can't take them no place. I've just been dying to say that. But I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'd like to thank whoever's responsible for allowing me the privilege of participating in this meeting. And in this day of sobriety, I don't know how many of you have been here all day for all the meetings, but I have. And heard Larry this morning and Dozy, I guess what's your name, and Debbie this afternoon. And I don't know a lot about Dozy. She seemed like a nice lady. I've known her for a while, but I do know that Larry is a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous and a member of my home group and did a fine job at noon. And Debbie, who I admire a great deal and respect very highly, is probably one of the best women alcoholics I know of. And I'd tell you that even if she wasn't sitting here, but it's really true. So I'm kind of pleased to be here. And if I go with anybody like this that I admire and respect, I have a little prayer that I say. I pray that maybe they'll be as proud to be here with me as I am to be here with them. And that's enough accolades for me. I'm going to get into Alcoholics Anonymous here sooner or later. But I think it's a privilege to be in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting tonight. I've always considered it some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never been able to get it through my head that I have some type of a right to be here just because I don't drink alcohol. I hope and pray to God I never get that type of complacent or that type of egotism to believe that somebody owes me something just because I don't drink alcohol and I put my butt in a chair in Alcoholics Anonymous every once in a while and occupy a space here. I hope it's always necessary for me to be here, no matter how long I stay here, to have to earn my place in Alcoholics Anonymous and try to pay back this tremendous debt that's been given to me or this tremendous gift that's been awarded to me through no asking of my own. So if you're new here tonight, and I know there were two of you stood up, must be two newcomers, but we got a lot of criminals here. I want you to know that. I mean, look at them court cards. I was in a meeting one night, and a guy was secretary, and a guy walked up to him and said to him, he said, "Would you sign my court card?" And the secretary said, "Are you alcoholic?" And the guy said, "No, judge sent me." He said, "Well, you're not an alcoholic. You must be a criminal. And we don't sign court cards for criminals." The guy looked at him kind of strange, walked away. You know, the most amazing thing happened the following week. This same guy came back, and he was an alcoholic. But do you know you can sign your own court cards? Do you know that everybody in this room is just as much a member of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am? The minute you say so, you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, if you don't want to come to meetings, you can just sign your own court card and go to the movie if you want to. It really isn't necessary for it to be here. I never wanted to be an alcoholic either. I wanted to be a criminal. I knew what whiskey did to people a long, long time before I ever took a drink of alcohol. See, whiskey's never been a mystery to me at all. Never in my life has whiskey ever been a mystery to me. Everybody in my family drank it. Those of you who heard Debbie talk today, she talked about nobody in her family drank. Everybody in my family drank. Man, they did the things that people who drink whiskey do. They used to gather up on Saturday and whip on one another. They stole each other's whiskey and each other's women, and they did all kinds of strange things. And whoever survived was the king for the week. I guess that's the way they worked their deal out. I don't understand that, though. But see, I understand that. I've always understood. I've always understood violence. Because I've always been an angry, hostile, bitter man. And violence was always the answer for me for everything. Always. Because of my anger and my fear and my frustration, it was much easier for me to run up and smack somebody before they found out how scared I was. So I always know that. I always knew what it was like to put your foot in somebody's belly. It's almost like a spiritual experience. Sometimes I feel like I'd like to do that today sometimes. That wasn't so confusing. What confused me was Wednesdays after these weekends. These people would gather up around one another and put their arms around one another and say, "We love one another because we're family." And I guess way back there I said to myself, if that's what love is, you can keep it. Because I don't ever remember uttering the word love to another human being again a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. Love was not in my vocabulary. And I understand what was going on. I knew there was something wrong with me. I didn't know what was wrong with me, but I knew there was something wrong with me. I didn't feel like everybody looked. I didn't like these people who did these crazy things, and I didn't want to be like them, but I was trapped, and I didn't know what to do about it. I looked at my older brother. He just sat around and listened to the radio all the time. Didn't seem to affect him. He just sang songs with Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Every once in a while, he'd reach up and kick the damn radio. Tell him, "Why don't you be mad like me or something?" He just looked at me like I was crazy. And one day I looked up and I saw my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived. She was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. If my grandmother was alive today, if I was to tell her, "Grandma, I ain't had a drink or a mood-altering chemical in my system for 33 years, she'd say, "Big deal. I ain't had one for 90. But I used to watch my grandma. Grandma used to get up on Sunday morning and go somewhere. Now, I didn't have the slightest idea where Grandma went, but I saw Grandma go and saw Grandma come back. Grandma would be gone 2 or 3 hours, and when she got back, something happened to Grandma. Grandma was a little lighter in her step, a little more sparkle in her being. And she'd be jumping around in that kitchen, cooking for these crazy people, singing songs to Jesus. Something had happened to Grandma. I didn't know what it was. Now, Grandpa, he used to leave on Thursdays, and he'd come back on Tuesdays, or else we'd go get him. And something had happened to Grandpa. Grandpa come back in all various states of being. Sometimes we'd have to go get Grandpa. Grandpa would be locked up somewhere. Grandpa had a bad habit of burning people's barns down. He'd just get cold out there and need a little warmth. Or he'd come back shot sometimes. They'd bring him in wagons. I remember one time they brought him back, he'd been shot. Somebody had shot him and threw off the balcony of a whorehouse in Kansas City. And they had to go get him, brought him back in a wagon. I remember that when I was a kid. I didn't want what Grandpa had. I wanted what Grandma had. Grandpa wasn't too attractive. So I went where Grandma went. Because I had some type of a goofy idea, like a lot of people, that if I just go where Grandma goes, I'll be like Grandma. But I didn't figure on a very simple little thing. That wherever I went, I went. Ain't that deep? That's about as heavy as I get, folks. So don't get worried about it too much. I don't know much more than that. I'm the problem. Wherever I go, the problem goes. I'm the problem. First thing I see in the morning when I get up is the problem. Usually it's sitting there waiting for me on the end of the bed. Go back to sleep. You shouldn't go to work today. They don't like you out there anyhow. And then it sits on the dashboard of my car and says, "Do you know they know you're tired?" Look at them. I'm the problem. I sit in that church scared to death because I didn't understand what was going on. And I looked around in that church, and all these people looked one way, and I felt another. I looked at my grandma, and something was happening to grandma, but it wasn't happening to me. And I wanted it to happen to me. I wanted so bad to feel like grandma felt, but it didn't. I felt guilty because the guy said I was supposed to love and honor and respect these people that I hated, my people. I don't know what to do about it. And one day, sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house, I found an answer. I saw my grandpa stash his jug. And when grandpa left, I went to the jug. And I took a drink of alcohol. That's all I did. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. Not the next 20 years of mayhem I created out there in the world. But the next couple of minutes of my life, I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It isn't a bad reaction. It's an abnormal reaction. Everybody that drinks alcohol doesn't have that type of a reaction. I took a drink of alcohol and something happened to me. The madness inside of me was subsided. The feeling of being different and apart from. People talk about the knot being untied. Clancy talked about the hole being filled up in his psyche. All those different things. Something happened to me. Maybe it was all those things. Maybe there was holes filled that I didn't know about. Maybe there was rocks in my gut that were cooled off. Maybe there were knots that was untied. I just know that something in my head went click, and I didn't give a damn anymore. I didn't care what grandma was getting kicked around in the kitchen or grandpa was getting shot. I didn't care if the old man was beating up mom and mom was beating up the old man. I didn't care about nothing no more. I just didn't care. That's what it did. And what drove me crazy was not that feeling I got from alcohol. It was the thing that kicked back in there that took me into the gates of insanity and death, not knowing what was the matter with me. I'm afflicted with something called the phenomenon of craving, that once I take a drink of alcohol, I can't quit drinking. I don't know how to quit drinking. I don't know. I wish I knew. I wish I could tell you. Well, I can tell you. You want to quit? Hit a cop in the mouth. That'll get you stopped for about 3 days. Well, not anymore. That might get the cop arrested. We have rights, you know. I took a drink of alcohol, and the same thing happened to me for the next 20 years every time I took a drink of alcohol. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, I was pulled from underneath a bridge and stood in front of a judge and sentenced to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sentenced me to 20 years in the penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around out there. I went from reform school to junior penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I like nut house better. It's a little more macho. I mean, if you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. You shouldn't quit drinking because you puke a little bit. Hang in there. I mean, you ought to give it a shot, for Christ's sake. Don't you say that? Really. You got to work at being an alcoholic. You know what I mean? You really do. Got to throw everything into life in there. Got to give it all you got. I did. I gave it everything. I gave it my sanity. I gave it my life. I gave it every living thing in my life. I gave it every dream or illusion or hope or aspiration I may ever have had when I was a child. Took it away from me from my first drink. I'm sitting on a furlough at a reform school from a form school when I'm 10 or 11 years old. I'm drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine. And most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. And the reason you've never heard of it is because it was experimental stage of Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. I'll tell you how bad it was. It never saw a grape. But it did what it was supposed to do. It took me to Never Never Land, I'll tell you that. Wine's the only thing I ever found that would hang you without a rope. That stuff is bad news, I'll tell you. Well, I tell you how bad it was. I'm having dinner a few years ago at a little place in Palm Springs. I'm down there playing some golf in one of the fancy restaurants. And there was a guy standing over there in a tuxedo, and I said, who's that guy? He's got a corkscrew around his neck. He's the wine steward. Now, these people are always kidding me. People that I sponsor for years have been looking for a bottle of Marco Petri red wine. And they come to the conclusion that there ain't none. And so I'm sitting there, and I called him over, and I said to him, have you ever heard of Marco Petri red wine? Well, he smiled. He said, why, sure I have. But I don't know anybody who ever lived who ever drank it. You know? Well, I looked at him, you know, with that typical, you don't challenge alkies. I looked at him and said, I used to drink it by the gallons, mister. He said, sure you did. He turned, walked away, and went back to his post. And I watched him. And every time I saw him watching me the rest of that night, I'd do things like this. It kept him on his toes, I'll tell you that. But I'm drinking this stuff, and it ain't taking me where I want it to take me. You see, that's always been my deal. I always wanted to go somewhere. And I wanted to go there right now. I didn't want to get there the day after tomorrow. I want to be there tomorrow. I want to be there right now. And I'm drinking this wine, and it ain't doing what I want it to do. Now, I hear people say things all the time that I really don't understand. They say, alcohol just quit working in my life, so I didn't drink it no more. It ain't never quit working in my life. If it ever quit working in my life, I wouldn't need to come to meetings no more. That's why I still have to go to 5 or 6 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a week. Why I still have to have a sponsor. Why I still have to go to book study meetings. Still find out about the steps and their traditions. I still have to sponsor people and do what I'm asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, because in the back of my mind, I know how to get relief when the conflict rises. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. But I'm sitting on the street going drinking this stuff, and it ain't doing it, and the guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, try these. And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? I just, you know. Thank God they weren't X-lax, that's all I can tell you. We have a whole new 12-step program called Laxatives Anonymous. I could be standing here tonight as the adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was little. Well, I hear stuff stupider than that around here. It makes a lot of sense to me. It worked. Thank God it worked. Because I'm sitting on the same street corner a couple of years later on a furlough from another reform school. I'm eating these pills. I'm drinking this wine, and it ain't taking me to Never Never Land. And a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. And the reason I do that is I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. And I'm self-serving, and I got an ego bigger in this whole room. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and for a long time after I was here, without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth. I was not interested in you at all. If you had something I wanted, I might have simulated interest in you until I got whatever it was you had that I wanted. And then when I'm through with you, I catch you lie like so much trash and went on about my business. My life, I told you, was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my inventories have solidified the idea that not one time in my life before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and for a long time after I was here did I ever utter a word to another human being, word of love to another human being. See, people like me don't love anyhow. Takers don't love. Takers take. Users don't love. Users use. And I'm a taker, and I'm a user, and I'm a loser. You're looking at me. If I ever told you I loved you, I would have given you an edge. And where I came from and the things I did, you don't give nobody no edges. Keep it. Because if you show weakness, your history. That's the way I live my lifetime. And if you live like that for any period of time, like I did, most of my life, you come to crawling around a cell in solitary confinement 35 years ago in a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. 35 years ago today or yesterday, one of them, I don't remember what day it was, whether it was Friday or Saturday, not very far from here in a little adobe called San Quentin, in solitary confinement, I came to out of a blackout rage, an insane rage, pulling the turkey down off the wall that they'd stuck through there on Thanksgiving Day, whatever day it was, where I'd thrown it in insane rage. And I'll tell you the most significant thing about that to me. There wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. And they should be gone. And I had no rights to have them back. And I still don't have any right to have them back. I don't have any rights at all. When I had rights, I had to defend them. Everything that happens to me in Alcoholics Anonymous and everything I get in Alcoholics Anonymous is a privilege to do certain things so I can get another day of sobriety in. So I don't have to live the way I used to live and be the thing I used to be when I was doing the things I used to do. That's the thing I pray God I never become again, taking a drink or going back to the penitentiary or living in a nut house or going through a series of shock treatments doesn't seem to bother me too much. I just never want to be that thing again, that's all. I never want to be that thing again. Blood-sucking parasite who lives in society and sucked everything dry that came near him and destroyed everything that came in contact with him. I don't want to be that no more. And so on the fourth day of November, 1959, on a Sunday morning, I'm sitting in a penitentiary and I looked up and I saw some women walk across the yard. The most significant thing about this to me is I'm sitting around with some of my partners talking stuff. That's what we do. We sit around and talk stuff. We're talking about the Cadillacs and the women, and thousands of dollars we got in express counts, and on and on and on. And the two truckloads of dope we got waiting for us down the street. And a busload of whores that's coming to visit us next month. But they're busy this month. And oh, sake, and I have a short on that smoke, partner. You know what I mean? You're tight this month. Mama's welfare check didn't come in. We're talking trash. That's all we ever talked anyhow was trash. Lie to one another. Ain't no small-time crooks in jail or the penitentiary. They're all multi-million dollar crooks. I mean, there ain't nobody ever stole two hams and went to jail. We stole 14,000 cows and 40 pigs, but we never stole two hams. Never done nothing small. Big-time operators, most of us. You know, ain't got 2 cents, ain't even got a cigarette. But we talk stuff, look good, cross our leg and talk about it. And I saw these women walk across the yard. Now, the most significant thing is I just got up from talking trash and walked behind these women and followed them into this old Quonset hut of a building. Now, the most significant thing I know about that day is that nobody said to me, where are you going? But we weren't interested in where one was going the other anyhow. You know what I mean? I mean, just if I left, somebody else had time to tell his lie. You know what I mean? Don't worry about you too much in there. And I sit down in the back row of this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sakes. I remember looking up on the backboard and I thought to myself, my God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. There were two big A's up there. I said to this clown sitting next to me, what is this? He said, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I sunk down in my seat. Gangsters weren't supposed to be hanging out with them winos. Been over hip anonymous. Zuzu's Anonymous. Macho Anonymous. Dope Fiends Anonymous. Oh, God, I like Dope Fiend, man. Macho, ain't it? Makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Dope. Makes addicts seem kind of candy-ass, don't it, Johnny? I can tell you, if you want to be bad, you ought to be bad. Get on out. Get on. The guy told me the other night talking about being an addict. I said, what'd you do? I said, smoke a little grass. I said, smoke grass? Because I smoke grass and I wasn't getting loaded. Anyhow, I sat down in this meeting with my coat collar up and waited for these women to get up and tell their racist stories. And they got up. Now, you got to remember something. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was 33 years ago. There weren't very many young, pretty girls in Alcoholics Anonymous. If there were, they weren't sending them up that penitentiary I was at, I'll tell you that. These old guys got up to talk that day and said they drank for a long time. You could look at them and know they'd been somewhere for a long time. They said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. I knew everything when I got here. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information, as I said in my first meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous. I know so damn much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true. And I sit there on my throne of contempt, judging and criticizing and making fun of. And I didn't know that I was looking at the miracle and looking at the answer, didn't understand what was going on. I saw the people. That's my miracle, Alcoholics Anonymous, is the people. I couldn't figure these people out. These people were goofy. They come up to this institution every week. A different group of four different people come up there once a month. Every Sunday there was a different group that come up there. You know what they did? They got up on Sundays. At their own expense, they drove 185 miles up those old back roads, bought their own gasoline, paid for their own food, spent 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them, who made fun of them, who mimicked them, criticized them, and sit there. And I couldn't figure them out. That's understandable. I'm a taker. How takers understand people who are given a little just for the hell of giving it? I don't understand givers. I've never seen a giver. I've never been around any. I never hung out with people who did something just for the hell of doing it. I never knew anybody who just gave something just for the hell of doing it. I used to ask some psychiatrists. They'd say, I want to help you. I said, would you help me if you weren't getting paid? Couldn't answer that. You want to help me? Quit your job. Help me. Oh, you really are sick, young man. They said. So one day I'm standing over in the street corner up against the corner of this thing. One of these guys walked by, this AA member, and I said, hey. That's why I talk to people. Hey. He looked around. I said, come here. He walked over to me with a puzzled look in his face. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm crazy. Now, I'm not just acting crazy. I am crazy. I got a piece of paper in my pocket to prove I'm nuts. You ever looked in the eyes of an insane person? It's scary. You ain't been there. You'll never understand what I'm talking about. But that guy looked in those eyes, and that light's on. There ain't nobody there, Hoss. And whatever you do, don't rile it. And I said to him, what kind of a sicko are you, anyhow? And the little guy just trembled. He said, why do you ask that? I said, you get some kind of kick out of coming up here looking at the animals in the cages? What's your deal? Give me one of the typical Alcoholics Anonymous answers and turned around and walked off. He said, kid, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. And he was done. You know how we are. We want something deep to get thinking about. Keep us from getting off our ass and doing anything if we can sit around and meditate on that for a period of time. I'll figure this one out. I said in these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, these goofy people come up there and say crazy things. I say, I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore, and everything is wonderful. I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, and I'm crazy. They just say, I wish I was alcoholic, man. It was just that simple. If I could just be, then all I'd have to drink was not drink, and I'd be okay. I'd sit in that meeting, and they'd say things like, you got to get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought active was being busy. I thought it was being in motion. I thought it was moving. I thought, so I picked up ashtrays and poured coffee and smiled at people. Went back there and set an inventory point and died. I'm doing what you told me to do, and I'm crazy. And every time you ask any of these people anything, you know what they tell you? It's in the book. What's in the book? Oh, it's there. You go look for it. You'll find it. Now, I discovered a tremendous thing in the 33 years I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. Tremendous thing. You want to hide anything from an alcoholic, put it in the book. They don't look there. You know why they don't look there? About three or four reasons, they don't look there anymore. There ain't no chapter into thinking. That stops a lot of us. Let me figure this one out. There's a chapter into action, but none into thinking. That kills a lot of people. I don't want to pay them attention to this damn shit. You got to do something. There ain't no chapter that deals with issues. And there damn sure ain't no chapter that deals with healing the wounded inner child. What it is a set of spiritual principles. And this is what kills most of us. When practiced as a way of life, spells the necessity to have to drink alcohol. It ain't any psychologically heavier than that. It works because one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic and something happens. You know why I'm alive and well today and why I've been sober from my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to this one? Not because I'm wonderful. Not because I'm one of God's chosen angels. Not for any other reason. I'm sober today and alive and well today because of my defiance, my arrogance, and my differences and my hostilities. You said to me, well, the answer was in that book. I'm going to work your damn program of recovery and prove to you I'm different. It won't work for me. Then I'll be able to throw it in your face and say so. That's how sick I was. Got to be careful. The greatest single event that ever happened to me in my entire lifetime happened to me in a room in a penitentiary with a little man doing what our program of recovery says is the fifth step. The greatest single event, bar none, being born, coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, being married, having my children born, my grandchildren, getting sober, the greatest single event that ever happened to me in my life happened to me in that room that day. I heard myself admit to that man that I was an alcoholic. That's all. Way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me this very instant. I stand here tonight, I know exactly what's wrong with me. Exactly. I'm an alcoholic. I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something, I could not have your program. Very simple. I separated me from you. I was not like you. I was better than you or worse than you, smarter than you or dumber than you, but I was not like you. When I became just like you, I have to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type. 4,000 years of recorded history, like it or not. I have to. And the reason I have to, it's become a matter of life and death with me, and it's my life. That's all. That's why I do it. Not your life, it's my life. I can't live and drink, and of myself, I can't keep from drinking. So why am I drunk? Because I found the thing that I thought I'd captured sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house when I was a child. I found the thing that I thought I'd captured sitting on that street corner 10 or 11 years old when I stuck that handful of pills in my mouth. I found the thing that I thought I'd found sitting on that street corner when I stuck that heroin in my arm. I found the thing I'd been looking for all my life and was born without. And didn't have the slightest idea what it was sitting in that room that day. I just know that I walked out of that room that day And everything in our program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted to do. Everything. I just found necessary to have to do 6 and 7, 8 and 9, to the best of my ability of what I can find in that institution. So when I came out of the penitentiary on June the 4th, 1961, I was wide open and I was available to be taught what to do in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Now, I knew about a program of recovery because it was outlined in a book. And to the best of my ability, I had fulfilled the first 9 conditions of our program of recovery, but I knew nothing about a fellowship. I knew nothing about taking my seat and being one among many. I knew nothing about sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, being concerned by the guy sitting next to me. I knew nothing about being concerned about anybody else. I'm just as much of a taker as I always was. You can't be a giver if you ain't giving. If all you're doing is sitting around here taking, you can't be a giver. I would go on the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was going there to get something. I was going to go there to get this thing and to keep this thing that was given to me. And thank God, there was a guy that came out of the woodwork by the name of Norm Alfie, who became my sponsor. Norm was with me for 22 years before he died. And everything that I know about life, I learned from that man and another old man by the name of Chuck Chamberlain, who was a father to me. Norm told me simple things like, go to work, you bum. I said, wait a minute, Norm, why are you calling me a bum? I'm not a bum. He says, what are you? I said, I'm an AA member. He says, you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. He said, get off of welfare, you bum. I said, wait a minute now, don't you ever start that with me, Norm. What makes you think I'm on welfare? I'm not on welfare. He said, what do you call living in an institution? Self-supporting through your own contributions? Go to work. So I went to work. I was afraid of him. You know why I was afraid of him? He always put everything in perspective with me. I'd say, why? He said, you may drink, okay. Seems to be the deal there. I mean, I don't want to do that no more. He knew. He'd been sober. He'd been doing these things. He's going to meetings. I knew he knew. I knew I didn't. See, that's one thing I've always known. I don't know. I didn't know. These people know. So if they do it, I'll do it. They say to do it, I'll do it. Now, lots of times, I knew it had no significance to my particular case. And most of the time when Norm was my sponsor, I knew he was just jealous of me because I had a better story than him. I knew that deep down, secretly in my heart, I knew that. I didn't tell him that, though, but I knew that. There's a lot of things you just do because you know that they really, you don't have to please them, you just have to act like you're pleasing them. You know, he was cruel to me. I don't know what to do out there. So I go to work. I show up at his job. Guy wants my Social Security card number. I look at him like he's stupid. What do you mean, Social Security card number? He said. He says, you got a Social Security card? I said, no, I don't. Why? Why, you need one? He said, how old are you? I said, I'm 30. He says, you don't have a Social Security card? I said, no, I don't. He said, why not? I said, I've never needed one. You're the first person who's ever asked me for one. He said, where have you been all these years? I said, you wouldn't understand if I told you. You know what he did? He took me down to the Social Security place. He got me a Social Security card, put me to work. God, he just killed it. You know what I mean? Now, it got me real bad. Now I got to go to work. I can't go back and snivel. Norm, they ain't hiring ex-convict. Well, I wouldn't snivel to Norm about that. I'd snivel to him down at the club. I'm a big man down at the club. All those bumps that hung out didn't work with big men down at the club. We talked stuff down there. Sit down there and say, well, if God wants me to have a job, he'll shoot it down here at the club. Deal. Tell you how I feel about that. Next time you get hungry, go lock yourself up in a closet and pray for a hot dog. When God squirts you one through the keyhole, you call me. I've been looking for a deal like that all my life. If you find one, call me. I'll ride a bicycle to you. I've been looking for it, man. I'm going to tell you something. I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous Activist Program for 33 years. I'm going to tell you, if I could have found an easier, softer way, I'd have found it. You ain't looking at no martyr. If I could find an easier, softer way to do this deal, like some of the intellectual giants that hang around here, I'd have found a long time ago. Because I've looked. Believe me, I've looked. But every time I watch somebody who's found the answer, they disappear. I don't know where they go. Every once in a while, one of them shows up again. Usually he's in the penitentiary somewhere. I go visit him. I go, oh, hi there. Well, I had a better idea. Chuck Chamberlain told me there's an easy way and a hard way to do this thing. He says the hard way is to think you can do it yourself. And the easy way is to know that you can't. Another deep one for you to kind of hang on there for a while. You know, it's tough, but I move pretty fast. I usually zero in with people with brain damage. We kind of got a little thing going together. Norm, you treat me cool, boy. I tell you that. He yelled at me and me, told me to sit down and shut up. I want to visit. I'd reach across, say something to him, he'd say, shut up! Just yelled at me. Little meetings. I tried to get up one time, go to the bathroom. I had to go to the bathroom. Norm, he says, shut up! I got to go to the bathroom, Norm. He says, shut up, sit still. I saw I wet my pants. He said, so what? Wet them before, haven't you? Sit down. You know what he did to me one night? This is always the straw that breaks the camel's back. And this was the straw that broke the camel's back. Hot July night. Hot July night. We're going to a little old meeting in Santa Ana, about the size of that room over there, with them people in back there. A little garage room, and they smoke in there like smoke. I mean, big time smoking in there, boy. Before they had rights, you know what I mean? Big time smoking. Everybody smokes. One right after another. Just smoking. I know it's hot. It's July. And I know it's, I'm going to get comfortable. I ain't got a car. Driver's license has been suspended in 1946 for the rest of my natural life. Long time. That's because I was such a wonderful person. So I call Norm. Norm, pick me up. If you see, he said, I guess you'll stand on the street corner, jackass. I'll pick you up about 6:30. Okay, Norm, I'll be standing here. I got my new shorts on, my new tank top, my new thongs. I slicked back my hair and put my shades on. And stood on the street corner. I didn't even know how I was standing. When you're hip, you stand this way, right? I invented this hip. 1946, we invented this in juvenile hall. You guys ain't nothing new around here. Norm drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. He de-hipped me in an instant. Well, I tell you, you think that's funny. More if you ever heard Norm Alpe's tape, you don't know how close you came to never hearing another one of his talks. I could have killed him. I would have killed him if I'd have caught him. I chased his car down the street, throwing rocks at him. Long about midnight that night, I called him up in Monrovia, long distance, reverse the charges, of course. Norm, what do you want, jackass? You treat me like an idiot. He says, you are an idiot. I said, how come you left me standing on the street corner? He says, you want to know? And I says, yeah. He says, would you go to church dressed like that, Johnny? And I said, no, I wouldn't. He says, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. I says, now that we got it started, let's clear it up here. You yell at me at meetings, how come? Tell me to shut up and sit still. Why? He said, Johnny, if you want to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't want to listen, you don't want to stay in there, that seems to be your business. Have you ever stopped to think that maybe somebody else does? I said, no, I haven't. Why? He said, I didn't think so. Selfish, self-centered people like you don't ever think about anybody but yourself. True. I ain't interested in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why in the world would I want to go sit in it? It's not some downtown social club. We ain't got any blue plate specials going on here. I come here because this is the only place when I find my world that I can sit alone and be more concerned about you and them about me and be at peace with me and my God. This may be the only place upon God's green earth that I'm at total peace with me and my God, sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Would you close the door? If they don't want to listen to me, I damn sure don't want to listen to them. Huh? Well, it might be from some other group. Tell them to go square dance somewhere else then. Where was I? Just can't hardly wait to tell you what I was saying before I got caught up in. Well, I really don't judge folks. I just observe and report the facts to you. I mean, it's just. Norm taught me many things, but the greatest lesson he ever taught me in my life, he wouldn't let me buy a car. I know that doesn't seem like a very much of a significant thing to you. But you see, I used to have to ride my little girl's bicycle to meetings. She had a little pink bicycle, and I used to have to ride it right through my old neighborhood. I used to have to ride it right by my old partners who were standing around on their big shiny cars and their $700 suits and their pocket full of money and their fancy bras hanging on their arm. Works, doesn't it, John? As I've saved up some money, Norm, I need a car. I'm being humiliated. He said, Johnny, he said, you have a driver's license? I said, no, I don't, Norm. Why? My driver's license has been suspended in 1946 for the rest of my natural life. You know that. He said, you won't drive a car for the rest of your natural life. I said, why not? He said, citizens like me have a right to be protected from jerks like you who think you have a right to live by any damn rules you want to. Think you have rights to live by rules, anybody else's rules but theirs. And then he summed it up. I said, Norm, I have never went to the penitentiary for driving on a revoked license. No. But if you drive on a revoked license, you may get drunk, and then you'll go to the penitentiary. So I didn't argue with him anymore. I tell you how wise he was, because my parole officer, the condition of my parole was that I worked or went back to the penitentiary. There was no halfway houses or who parked the car. If you don't have a job, you go back to the penitentiary. I had to have a job, and I can't get to the job if I don't have a driver's license. So I went to see my parole officer, and I told him, I got a job, but I can't get to my job. Now, I got to have some type of a driving permit to get a car to go back and forth to work. So he gave me a temporary driver's permit to get a car. Now I got Norm. I got a permit to drive an automobile and money to buy one, so I called him up. You know what he said to me? You got money for insurance? I just hung up the phone. I may be dumb, but I ain't stupid. The day came when I had a car, I had money in the bank, I had money for a car, I had the driver's license, I had money for the insurance, I just went and bought a car. Hell with you, Norm. I go get one, drive over to your house, drive it in the front yard, honk the horn. Honk, honk, honk. Here he come out the backyard. He had one of them little tank top shirts on. A pair of Levi's, he's barefooted. He looked at me, looked at that car, looked at me, looked at that car, and put his arms around me. Now, he had a tear in his eye, and I never saw one of them in his eyes before. And he hugged me, and what he said to me, I never forget. I hope I don't ever forget. As long as I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I may never forget this. He said, maybe you're starting to get the idea that there ain't a damn thing special about you just because you don't drink alcohol anymore. Maybe you're starting to get the idea that there ain't a damn thing special about you just because you ain't locked up no more. Maybe you're starting to get the idea that you got to do just like everybody else has to do. As a matter of fact, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got to do it just a cut above everybody else. You got to be a little more courteous, a little more considerate of the guy sitting next to you. He says, well, you may drink if you're alcoholic. You remember, you don't have any rights around here, Johnny. You have privileges. I have rights. True. I've never forgotten that. He told me one time that I should go sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I should listen. I should listen to everything that's done in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because there may be a sentence, a word, or a paragraph that will save my life somewhere down the line. And I can stand here and tell you that in the 30-some years I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, there have been many times in my sobriety that I have been insane with some type of a situation that I put myself in. Be it anger or hostility or bitterness or guilt or whatever it may be. That when I'm driving down the street and my insane rage, some will pop through my head. This too will pass. Over all God's kids. Day at a time. First things first. Or something some speaker may have said to me one time. A speaker said to me one time in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I loved it. He said, you got to remember, the obsession to drink does not always start as a drink. Remember that if you're alcoholic. If you're not alcoholic, it don't make diddly damn what I've said, what I don't say. Because it really isn't a matter of life and death with you if you're not alcoholic. If you're alcoholic, you may be able to hang around on the outside of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come and get out of the court deals and do whatever you got to do. You may be able to come around here and have a cup of coffee and pass on and pass through. But if you're alcoholic, your life is on the line. I know that may not seem significant to a lot of people because sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and doing these simple things may not seem to be the answer. I didn't think so. But I'm riding down the street one night with an old man by the name of Chuck Chamberlain. I tried to embellish on him that we were the chosen ones. I wanted to know if my ego was right. I wanted to believe that I was chosen, that I was some type of a special agent from God. Really, really. And so I said to him, listen to this. I tried to read that nonsense that you see on some of these literature tables, why we were chosen. He said, we aren't chosen. I said, what do you mean we ain't chosen? It says right here. He said, no, Johnny, we're all God's kids. If I am, you are. If you are, I am. Makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust. I said to him, then how come I'm sober? I know people who are far better people than I'll ever be who aren't sober. He said, that's simple. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. Now, what do God's kids act like? I tell you, I'm sure that Norm Alfie was one of God's kids. Now, I don't have any documented facts from God about that. I'm sure that Chuck Chamberlain is one of God's kids. I don't have any documented facts from God or no tablets about that. And I'm sure my sponsor, Clancy Emerson, is one of God's kids. But Chuck taught me that God's kids help God's kids get things done that need to be done. They do it just for the hell of doing it, Norm used to say. They answer telephones with the thing that the date's open that belongs to you. They go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and try to be helpful there, not takers there, givers there. They sweep floors and they make coffee and they set up meetings. And they do whatever it is they're asked to do. They're not guests in Alcoholics Anonymous, they're members. Those are God's kids. And I'm sure those three men, because I watched them. And there ain't anybody in the world, and you better believe this, that sits in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with any more of a critical eye than I do. Because I'm looking for an out most of the time. But what has happened to me is I've sat around and watched these people that I love and admired, these magnificent men who went before me. And I watched the legacy they passed on to some of the people who are coming behind them. Debbie has a great deal of the qualities of the old lady who came to the penitentiary by the name of Myrtle Snyder who came to see me. Loves Alcoholics Anonymous and his fellowship and his people. That's why I admire and respect her so much. I like people. See, I love people who love Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to surround myself with those type of people. I don't need the malcontents who think that Alcoholics Anonymous is just some damn place for them to come and sit and cool their heels once in a while they're getting the heat off. I want people who come in and try to keep Alcoholics Anonymous alive for the next 1,000 years. My grandchildren or my great-great-grandchildren come here. I want them to be able to come and sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and hear about the disease of alcoholism. I don't want them to be like the thousands of people who are dying out there in them streets who have been to places they thought were Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and think that they have been in AA meetings and think they have been in AA and they're dying from the disease of alcoholism and they've never heard about it. They've heard about this psychobabble and psychic phenomena and all this other nonsense and this victimization crap that comes in here floating from outside of things designed to destroy people like you and me. I am responsible for my actions. Whatever they may be, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm responsible for all the bad in my life. I can't tell you I've been a model citizen of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't tell you that every day I've lived out there has been a day standing in the sunshine of the streets, and I haven't eaten a banquet every time I've sat down, and I walk hand in hand with God forever and ever. Amen. That I make no mistakes. I make a lot of mistakes. I make a lot of big mistakes. But one thing I don't do, I don't come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and sit here and take my sobriety for granted just because I'm here. I don't do that. I used to call my sponsor up in the middle of the night and I'd say things like, "No!" He'd say, "What do you want, jackass?" I'd say, "No, my program ain't working." He'd say, "Try ours." I swear to God. And he'd say things like, "Jackass, your program never did work. If your program worked, what the hell are you doing here?" True, my program don't work. Never did. Neither's yours. Ours does. We have charlatans hanging around our places. Typhoid Marys who are swooping around in Alcoholics Anonymous, sucking alcoholics out of here, killing them by the thousands. Saying things like, "AA ain't enough." Anybody ever tell you that ain't never tried AA? I don't care what they tell you, they ain't never tried AA. They have never tried this thing as a way of life and practiced these principles to the best of their ability and gave a little just for the hell of giving it and found a God of their very own. I don't care who they are. One night I was hanging out at a literature table with Norm. I seemed like I always hung around the literature table looking for the giants. What I'm looking for is something to make my ego big is what I'm looking for. Really looking for it. And this guy said to me, "Gee, Johnny, you're a miracle." "Oh, really?" "Oh, yeah." He said, "Man, I know your story. You are a miracle, man." I thought, "Really?" Yeah. I went down and sit by Norm and stared off into space. He looked at me. We're driving home that night in the car, and I'm staring off into space. He said, "Jackass, you've been smoking something? What's the matter with you?" "Norm, I'm a miracle." He says, "You're a what?" I said, "I'm a miracle." He stopped the car in the middle of the freeway. He says, "Where do you get this crap? Where do you come up with this nonsense?" I said, "I heard it at the literature table." He said, "Jackass, you're not a miracle. Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. You are just a small part of it." Now, I don't know what that does for another living soul upon the face of this earth. But that bit of information has kept me small enough to stay here. Do you realize what a guy with an ego like mine would do if I really believed I was a miracle? I mean, move over, San Francisco. Here I come, baby. With my little role. Miracle coming. Whew. Take care of me. I mean, I know there's a lot of people like that around here. I'm a miracle. Take care of me. You're sick is what you are. What kind of an ego trip is that? I'm a miracle. What an ego trip. Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. The greatest miracle and the greatest phenomenon of the 20th century. God, to think that I could just be a small, insignificant part of it. The greatest thing that I know of. I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous all the time. I heard it today. "I had to learn to love me before I could love you. I had to learn to forgive me before I could forgive you." That ain't the way it is with me. You know, there's a lot of times I don't like me at all. I don't believe I've ever really ever loved me. I wouldn't know how to start. But I ain't never not loved you. Never. I loved you from the first time I sat with you to this very instant. I loved you when I didn't even know I loved you. Because I was drawn to you like a moth to the flame. I'm alcoholic, and you were alcoholic, and you came to me and said, come with us, and you don't have to do this no more. What a magnificent thing this is. You don't have to live this way no more if you don't want to. Magnificent. Every living thing I have in my life, I probably owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. Everything I may ever hope to have in my life, I will probably owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, you better believe this. It's a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand tonight. But for the grace of God, AA, and good friends like Jim, I could have missed it all. God bless you.